left off on the Tesla days. The first one line is Derachem, Rached Achinoam. It's a little bit more than halfway down. The Gemara was to raise the question that the Mishnah tells us that the reason why we have the whole system of Aliyahs of Kohen, Levi, and Israel is to play that Kisholom. We don't want them to fight. Nuntes it is. Because it's going to be a free for all so that everyone's going to start to fight with the Gabbai. Even though we have a system, people still fight with the Gabbai. But it would have been a lot worse. There wouldn't have been any system at all. So we have Kohen, Levi, and Israel as a Dinmen de Rabbanan to prevent any fighting. Asks the Gemara, it's a Dinmen HaTorah. We learned that from Sukkim that you have to give cover to the Kohen. The Kohen always takes precedence. So why does the Mishnah present it as only a din with the Rabbanan? So we'll pick it up now on the Testament days. The first one line is Durachel. We'll get a little bit more than halfway down. The end of the line, Elamar Bailech of the Mar. What our Mishnah is referring to is a statement that Mar made as follows, the Sanya. Shnayim Amtinin Zela Zebekara, Shlosha Eim Amtinin. If you have two people who are eating together, and there's a communal plate, the plate they're both going to be sharing food from. So the proper thing to do is they should wait for one another. One guy comes, the other guy's still getting his, taking his jacket off, sitting down. You wait for a second, let everybody sit down before he starts eating. Shlosha Eim Amtinin. But if you have three people, a lot of people sitting around, so it'll take forever to stop for wait for everybody, then you're not required to stop. So again, this is just out derech eretz. Habokseya hu poshe yado tchila. That the person who was honored with making hamotzi to be motzi everybody else. We usually only do this on Shabbos, but one person makes a motzi for everybody. But the days of the Gemara is fairly common when you have a group of people who eat together. So one person would make a motzi, it's totally acceptable for everybody. So the person who had the cover to make a motzi, he should be the one to start to take the food as well. These are just simply rules of their heretz that Chazal would convey. So Matzeh Pusha Yadchim, and Balach, and cover the rabbi, we should go to the men of Shishbiyadu. But what if the person who made a motzi wants to now give cover to his Rebbe, or somebody else, the bigot of Chacham was there, and he wants to honor him with taking the first bite? So that's okay. It's not usher for him to hand over the honor to somebody else. It's perfectly okay. But Mar said concerning this halacha, lo shar al b'suda. The only time that it's okay to forego on the rules that Chazal set up in terms of kavod, that's only in a meal above the basic knesses low. But don't be such a tzaddik. Don't think, well, in shul, you know, I'll be moichah my kavod of getting kohen. I'll give it over to my rebbe. But Gemara says that you shouldn't do. To also in suya, because that's going to lead to arguments, to fighting. So basically, min haTorah, the kohen's supposed to get the first aliyah, but he's allowed to be moichah. If he wants to give his kavod over to somebody else, he's allowed to do so. But in shul, we're telling him he shouldn't do that. It's not a good idea, even though he thinks he's been such a tzaddik and giving a great kavod to his rebbe. That's not right, because who give it to his rebbe? Then there'll be another rebbe who'll say, wait, why don't you give it to me? The two rabbis will fight with each other. So therefore, it's a simple protocol. The kohen always gets the first aliyah. Amr of Masta, had the Amr of Masta said this low. Rav Masta said, that which we say, that in shul, so we don't want the coin to forgo the aliyah because it's going to lead to fighting. That's only true on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There are a lot of people in shul on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and the odds of fighting are going to be a lot worse. But on Mondays and Thursdays, low. So then it's okay. Then there aren't so many people in shul on Mondays and Thursdays. So then if you want to give up your aliyah, you're allowed to give up the aliyah. The takana of the Neidak HaShon doesn't apply on Mondays and Thursdays. So Tosfos points out that probably only applied to Zman Chazal. Days Chazal, a lot of people were farmers. People had all kind of, they get up very, very early in the morning. Their farms were far away from the cities. It wasn't so easy to pick up the shul on a daily basis. So the minyan attendance during the week was significantly less. So Tosfos right today, who doesn't come to shul on Monday and Thursday? Everybody comes to shul. So the same amount of people in shul on Monday and Thursday. I wish to be zeichet to that. So it comes to us and says, so today, even on Mondays and Thursdays, we don't give up aliyahs. The Kohen keeps the first aliyahs. Ini, is it really true that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, that you're not allowed to give the Kohen, you're not allowed to give an aliyah to someone greater than him? That Rav Huna used to take the aliyah of Kohen on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though he wasn't a Kohen. So you see, this undermines everything that we've been saying. But says, no, that was a very, very unique situation. Shani Rav Huna, the field of Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Kohani Cheshiva there to Israel, make a Habukai Falei. Huda was so the unchallenged, undisputed Lador, that even the great Kohanim, Rabbi Amin, Rabbi Asim, with the Kohanim Chashuv of Eretz Yisrael, even they were subservient to Rav Huna. When you have someone who's an Echad, Bnei Elijah, someone who's such an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, so such a person can actually take the first Aliyah Levaisa. We don't really do this anymore, but in theory, that's the minute. You have the undisputed Gadol Dor walks in, so you're allowed to give him the first Aliyah. You can give him Kohen, everyone understands that everybody, all the Kohanim of Meichel, no one's going to get into a fight over this. Rabbi tells us that we have the following tradition. If there happens not to be a Kohen in Shul, so then the entire Chavila, the entire package has been unraveled. Namely, the whole protocol of having Kohen, maybe Yisrael, there's no Kohen, then you're not mechuyev to give a Levi at the first Aliyah. Rashi quotes two opinions about, is anything wrong with giving the Levi first Aliyah? So there are some who say, no, Rashi quotes one opinion that says, you're not mechuyev to give a Levi, there's no Kohen. You want to give a Levi. You don't want to give a Levi, don't give a Levi. There's no obligation to give a Levi first, but there's nothing wrong with it either. Then Rashi quotes an opinion that says, no, that your doctor should not give the Levi a first Aliyah. So the different shuls have different practices about this. Why should you not give the Levi a first Aliyah? So I think there's not to take the Rav, but a Levi. So the Rav said that the idea is that to give the Levi a first Aliyah almost undermines the entire role of what a Levi is. The role of a Levi is to be second to the Kohen. That's what the Torah says. He's supposed to help out the Kohanim. But it's not independent status. It's as secondary to the Kohanim. So if the Kohen's not here, to run to give the Levi the first Aliyah really would be inappropriate. It presents some misrepresentation of what the Levi is all about. So again, the Yesh V'Yesh. Some shuls that do give the Levi the first Aliyah, there's no Kohen, and others don't. But Amrei Abaye, Abaye said we have another tradition. Naktinon ein shav Levi kari Kohen. If there's no Levi in Shul, so then of course you give the Kohen the first Aliyah, and then you give the Kohen the second Aliyah as well. So Inni asks the Gemara, is that really true? We're familiar with this, but the question is, wait a second, is that really true? From Rabbi Yochanan, Kohenach a Kohen lo yikra, that you're not allowed to call a Kohen after another Kohen, you should become a Sharishon, because people are going to think, wait a second, we just gave the Kohen the first Aliyah, and now we're calling a Kohen for the second Aliyah, it must be that the first Kohen wasn't really a Kohen. People are going to start to spread rumors about the yichus of the first coin. So as a general rule, we don't give a one coin after another coin. And similarly, Levi achar Levi, you don't give a second Levi after a first Levi, but you go Shupagam Shneim. Because people are going to say that the first Levi is no good, then they're going to say maybe the second Levi is no good. So we don't want to get people confused if you don't give one coin after another. So answers the Gemara, no, when we said before that there's no Levi and Shul, we give a Kohen to Elias, Kika Mina Ba'osto Kohen. It means you call the same Kohen up twice. You don't call first Mr. Kohen, then Mr. Katz in place of Levi. You give Mr. Kohen, both Elias. We must all know this. So you give the second Kohen, so we become Levi. There's no Levi. So you give him the second Aliyah as well. But you're not allowed to call up a second Kohen. I remember it's interesting, even though this is something that's so obvious to us, and we've all seen this a million times, that the Kohen gets the first Aliyah, then the Kohen gets the second Aliyah, there's no Levi. I remember Rabbi Willi once Kabbatos and Shear, he's never seen this in his entire life. He's a Levi. He never ever saw that happen, that you give a Kohen to Aliyah. So comes the Gemara and says that, Maishda Levi Acha Levi, Nikabab Gam Shneem, the Lashon of the Gemara before was a little bit confusing. The Gemara said that you shouldn't give one Levi an Aliyah right after the previous Levi. Because there's a double Pagam. The people are going to say that one or the other maybe may no longer really be a Levi. So the Amri, because one people are going to say, Chad mina lav Kohen, lav Levi. People are going to think that one of them wasn't a real Levi. So yes, the Gemara, Kohenach, Kohenami, Amri Chad mina lav Kohenu. When it came to giving a coin after a coin, it's a different coin after a coin. So the Gemara said that you shouldn't do it because people are going to think that the first guy wasn't really a coin. So somehow we weren't concerned with the second fellow. Why aren't we worried about the second guy? The reason why we're not worried about the second person is because we're talking about a unique situation that everybody knows that the second guy is a coin. It's not like it's a stranger in Shul. We know for a fact this guy's been a coin for the last 50 years. So if that's the case, that we're dealing with a scenario that we know that that his father was a Kohen, so what do you worry about by a Levi? There was a little bit of a lack of parallel here. When it came to a second Kohen, we said, nothing to worry about, everybody knows his father was a Kohen. When it comes to a Levi, so we have what to worry about. What do you have to worry about? If everybody knows his father's a Levi, what could be wrong? Rabbi says, no, just because you know that his father's a Levi, his child may not be a Levi. You could have a Levi whose child, whose son is not a Levi. How is that? El Amri Mamzeris on the scene of Nasim. If he marries somebody who's not allowed to marry, if a Levi marries a Mamzeris, or a Levi marries an Asid, Asid was a group of part of Klais from the Psule Yichos. So if a Levi marries someone who's not allowed to marry, so that child doesn't follow his Levius anymore. The child is a Mamzer or a Nasid, or Pasal and Zari. But the rest of the same is true here also. Hachtanami Amri, Hushachalutza Nasid. If a Kohen marries a woman who's divorced, or a Kohen marries someone who had Chalitza, so the child, the child becomes a Cholol, and he also loses his Kohuna. So the same story. If you give the second guy a Kohen, so people are going to think, wait a second, the last guy had Kohen, and now this guy's getting Kohen. No, this guy must be a Yisrael. So they're scratching the head. All the people who are spreading rumors in the middle of shul, trying to figure out what's going on. Last guy had Kohen. This guy's getting an Aliyah. It must be that his father married a Grusha. It must be that this person is not really a Kohen. So the Gemara says, there's nothing to worry about. Me a lady, me kahave. If a person loses his kahuna, he becomes a Yisrael. He doesn't become a lady. So if you see a guy getting, you see Mr. Kohen getting an Aliyah. Then you see Mr. Katz getting an Aliyah. So no one's going to think that, oh, Mr. Katz must be puzzled. If Mr. Katz was puzzled, he would be getting the third Aliyah. He would be getting the second Aliyah. So everyone's going to realize that there's nothing really to worry about. So the Gemara says, what are all these fears for? Uleman, Iliyosh, Virakachazileh. If we're afraid for the people who are in shul or staying in shul, they're going to count right away how many Aliyahs there are. They're going to realize that there's nothing wrong with the amount of Aliyahs that we gave. Eliyotzin is for the people who leave shul early. So we're afraid a guy's going to stay in shul 3-4 Aliyahs. He's going to leave. And he's going to walk back home. He's going to tell his wife, you won't believe it. You thought Mr. Katz was a Kohen. He's not a Kohen. The whole thing was a shame. He's really puzzled. So because of the people who are going to draw conclusions, because I was very concerned that we make sure the order is always Kohen Levi, so we don't want to give two Kohens in a row. That's going to shed some question about the Yichus of the Golanim. And you give two Levim in a row, that's also going to potentially shed some problems about the Yichus of the Golanim. And so this is where the problems start. We're up the 15th time around. Of blaming, sometimes all you got left is a bunch of Levians. You got to try to stagger a little bit. The folks will talk about when you're ready to lay 15 Aliyahs, whether this concern really exists altogether. So now the people from Goliel sent their message to Rabbi Chalbo, Acharei Mikarim. Is there any other order for other Aliyahs? So we have the Kohen, the Levi, and now we have the rest of Israelim. Is there any way that Chazal was concerned, we should try to give a proper order in terms of getting other Aliyahs. Well, how about the other? So Rabbi Chalbo didn't know the answer. So also the Shaila of Yitzchak Navcha. So we went and asked from Yitzchak Navcha. Yitzchak Navcha told him, Amalei Achareyan, there is an order. Again, whether we exactly follow this order to the team is Malazaz, not exactly, but there is a theoretical order that we should try to give in terms of the hierarchy of Yisraelim itself. So Achareyan Karet Amei Chacham Amun and Parnasim Al Hatzibur. So the first people who get the first aliyah are the Tamei Chachamim, who are in charge of the tzibur, the people who are helping out the tzibur. There are some places where the Rebbe always gets the Rav always gets to that. Remember what happens in Kerem Yavne? So the Rosh Hashiva, the Govim Satzal, you always got Shlishi. Every Shabbos gets Shlishi. There were some shuls, so that was the practice. The Rishon quote a story that Rebbe Tam's practice was he would always get Shlishi. Like this Gemara, that Tamei Chachamim and Paras was he would always get Shlishi. And there was one Shabbos where Rebbe Tam was in Avedos. So an Ovel is not supposed to be called up for an Aliyah. But the post can say, if you already called them up, then you realize the Gevaltis and Avelis, and you have to let them get the Aliyah, because otherwise it's going to be Avelis for Hesia, it's going to be a public manifestation of Avelis. So the Gabbai knew Rabbi Natan was an Avelis, so he didn't call him up. So the Tosus quotes that Rabbi Natan went up to the Aliyah anyway, because he realized that since every week he got Shlishi, if he doesn't get Shlishi, everyone's going to chop. It's because he's in Shiva, and that would be a public demonstration of Avedus. So again, the Zman Chazal, that was the practice, that the person who would get the third Aliyah would be the Tamilcham of Munu Paras Matzibah. The Acharehen, who would be after them? A Tamilcham of Uyumim Rostu Paras Matzibah. Someone who theoretically could have been, one rabbi of the community, so he theoretically could have been the next in charge. The Acharehen, B'nei Tamilcham, Shemaseh Munu Paras Matzibah. After that come the children of those whose parents are the Rabbanim. Racharei and Rashi Knesios. After that, are the Rashi Knesios. Rashi Knesios were like the Gabayim, the people who were in charge of all the other things for the, I guess the show president, whatever the modern day equivalent of this would be. But after that, everybody else gets the regular aliens. Shochel ben Gog, Rabbi Chalbo. The people from the Galil sent another question to Rabbi Chalbo, also related to Kriyas HaTorah. Ma'u likros b'chumash b'beis HaKnesses b'tzibur. Are you permitted to use in shul a chumash? And we say a chumash, I'm going to print a chumash we have today. Rashi's picked the point out. In the days of Chazal, all the Sfarim were the Galil, they were all scrolls. But sometimes, instead of writing a scroll of the entire Sefer Torah, they would have a scroll say for Breishis, and a scroll say for Shmos, a scroll say for Vayikra. So are you permitted to lay from those scrolls in shul for Kriyas HaTorah? But the reason why the Gemara is asking the question is because Kriyas HaTorah is not really a mitzvah in that Torah, according to the overall majority of opinions. So Kriyas HaTorah, except for very, very few exceptions, is usually going to be only a mitzvah in the Rabbanan. So it could be that when Chazal instituted Kriyas HaTorah in the Rabbanan, they didn't institute even an absolute bona fide Sefer Torah. Maybe as long as you have a full Sefer Breishis, that's also it's also acceptable. The post can quote this Gemara. So every once in a while, you find a mistake in the Sefer Torah. Let's say you don't have enough Sefer Torah around. So sometimes you luck out. Let's say you find a mistake in the Sefer Torah and Pashas Vayechi. So, okay, so whatever you do Shabbos morning, but not Shabbos Mincha, I'm going to lay Shmos. So some Rishonim say, oh, you're going to lay Shmos? It's a different Sefer. So if the Gemara suggests the possibility, maybe you can lay from a whole Sefer, even if it's not an entire Sefer Torah. So the fact that there's a mistake in one of the Sefer, maybe it doesn't impact on the next Sefer. Maybe such a Sefer exists. So the Gemara continues and asks, what's the din? So are you allowed to lay from from just one sefer alone? So lo habi biyabe. So Rabbi Chavo didn't know the answer to that question. Also shalom b'tzignavcha. So he asked b'tzignavcha. Lo habi biyabe. He didn't know the answer to that question either. So also shalom b'midrasha. So they sent the question on to the Beis Medrash. Now all the Amoraim in the Beis Medrash were discussing the shaila. Upashtu amehadam rishvom b'chmeni Rabbi Yechonon. So they understand that they wanted to bring a proof of a statement that Rabbi Yechonon had made. If a Sefer Torah is missing a whole piece of a cloth, it means one whole section wasn't connected to it, it's missing, so then one is not permitted to talain from it. The Gemara says it the same way if it's missing a urea means it's missing a couple of columns, so you can't lay a couple of columns if it's missing an entire Sefer. So I've actually heard from two different people who had this case, and there was literally a Sefer Torah that was missing urea. The Sefer Moshe made a mistake. He forgot to sew on one of the columns. If you start to read, goes to the next column. It's like five pages later. The Mamshah literally forgot to sew on a column. So that's what the Gemara says, that if it's missing an entire urea, so ain't covering both. So you can't lay for the Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, no, Velohi. Maybe that's worse than the whole Sefer Bereishis. Hasam Nichsam and Milsay. Here it's Mamshah missing. There are five columns missing. That's Nabachosya. Hakal Nichsam and Milsay. It's not missing. It's an entire Sefer Breishis. It's not Shmos, but it's an entire Sefer Breishis. So maybe that's okay. So the Gemara concludes that you can't do that. Rabbi Rav Yosef Damichi Vayim, they both said, "Ain Koyim B'Chumash Nevesi Knesses." You're not allowed to lay from just the whole Chumash in Shul. Mishum Kavet Tzibur. It's a lack of Kavet Tzibur. It's a very cheapening of the Kriyas HaTorah. You come out with just one fifth of the Sefer Torah. So that's not right. So therefore, the Maisi are not allowed to lay. So the Rishonim have a big machlokes about how to read this whole sugya. The Gemara almost makes it sound like if you're missing like a significant amount, you're missing four to five chumashim, or you're missing an entire entire piece of parchment with five columns. What if you're missing one word? You're missing one letter? So would we say that when it comes to tefillin and mezuzahs, the Mishnah says explicitly in Menachos, even one letter disqualifies the tefillin and mezuzahs? Would we say the same thing for a Sefer Torah? Maybe Sefer Torah is different. Maybe a Sefer Torah is missing a couple of letters, a couple of words here and there. It's not the end of the world. We're only talking about laning anyway. It's not a mitzvah deraisa. Maybe Chazal is such a thing. As long as it's basically a Sefer Torah, you know it's missing a few letters here and there. So this was a big machlokes that we showed him. So this is the tshuva in the Rambam, where the Rambam writes that if you have a Sefer Torah missing a letter or two, you can still lane from it. It's okay. You can be yotze, kristoik, make brachas, even if it's missing a couple of letters. The problem is that the Rambam in Mishnah Torah doesn't say that. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah says explicitly if it's missing a letter, you can't lay from it at all. Again, the Rambam lived for 60 plus years. He wrote shuls at different times in his life. We never really know which people change their minds. So one time in his life, the Rambam thought you can lay from a false Sefer Torah, and another time in his life, he thought that you can. We generally accept our halacha as follows, that we will never take out a Sefer Torah if we know full well that it's missing a letter. We're not going to lay from it. But if we already lame from it, very often you find a mistake in the Kriyas HaTorah. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that you don't have to go back to the beginning of the parish and start all over again. But the Eved, you can rely on the tshuva of the Rambam. So Rambam Shem, all the way. But the Eved, if you lame, and there was a mistake in the Sefer Torah, Nishkifel. That's the reason why the Mishnah quotes the Macharonim. Let's say you find a mistake in the Sefer Torah, but it's a questionable mistake. It's a machlokes. Some poskim say the letter is kosher, some say the letter is posel. So we have the following rule. When it comes to tefillin and zuzos, mistake, something serious, something that rises to the chumrah. When it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, you can keep on leaning. You're in the middle of laning and you say, oh, yeah, there's a little bit of a potential problem. When the Rav looks at it to see, he doesn't have to see that's kosher chol ha-deis. He has to see that's kosher according to some deis. As long as according to some opinions, the Sefer Torah is kosher the way it is, so with the Yevon will just continue as fake's faker. Maybe it's kosher, and even if it's possible, maybe you can lean for a possible Sefer Torah.
But the Gemara direction is not on the Sefer itself, it's on the seaboard. So the whole reason that you can't do it is more on the seaboard, not on the chisaron.
Right. So it was like Chazal and Masachet because of covered seaboard. So therefore, Chazal didn't want that we should cheapen the seaboard and start laning from things that are missing. Half the Torah is missing. So that's what some Mishnah said. That's a half the Torah is missing. It's one letter missing. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Nobody knows the difference. That's Yubachavim that Yubas Rambam, and the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah writes now. He assumes that once Chazal instituted that, you have to have a full Sefer Torah. We don't make any distinctions anymore. We don't say, well, one letter is okay. What about 10 letters? What about 1,000 letters? So once they're Masaka, you need a full-fledged Sefer Torah. It's got to be a full-fledged Sefer Torah. Rabbi Rav Yosef, Tamid Shemayim, like what tells us about Rabbi Rav Yosef, who both said, I say that Aftarta, also the making of Shabbos. By time the Lalita Likosev, that there used to be a thing called the Sefer Aftarta. Sefer Aftarta was that little the Sefer of Torah. So, you know, Chazal instituted that after Kriyas HaTorah, so you say after something from the Navi that was related to some degree to either to the Parsha or to the Inyan of the Yoma. So what you're really supposed to do is, let's say the Haftorah is from Navi Yeshayahu. So you should take out an entire Sefer Yeshayahu and lane from the middle of the, wherever the Tzom of the Haftorah are. The Haftorah is the Sefer Shmuel, you take out a whole Sefer Shmuel. So it was very, very expensive because you have to get the Sefer to buy. He's got to write 60 plus prakim for the five haftorahs that you need. So they came up with a cheaper idea. It's called the Sefer Haftorahs. We have printed Sefer Haftorahs. They had a written Sefer Haftorahs. So they had a Sefer on cloth and had Bereishis Haftorah, you know, Noach Haftorah, Lech Haftorah. So they skipped around from the different Nevi'im. So the Gemara says it's not right. You're not allowed to use the Sefer Haftorahs. Also make a Mishabat. That might time only because you're not allowed to write less than a full Sefer. So you have to write a whole Navi Shayo. You're not supposed to write this. So Ma'abravashi said, not only you're not supposed to read from it, you're not even supposed to move it on Shabbos. It's Muktza, my time with Davon Chazal and Mekabe. Because the din is, you're not allowed to read from it, therefore, the din is, it becomes Muktza. It's something that's not usable on Shabbos and Yontif. So Gemara says, no, the Gemara rejects and says, Velohi, it's not true. Charlotte Tutule, Visharlotte Mekabe. It's permissible to move it, it's permissible to actually use it. Why is that? You're right. You're not allowed to write a part of a sefer of Tanakh. You have to write an entire sefer. So the question is, no. The reason why you're allowed is as follows: the Rabbi Yechon of Rabbi Shimon Lokish, Ma'ani b'Sifrei Diagadatim Shemata. Rabbi Yechon of Lokish used to look at a Sifrei Diagadatim. Sifrei Diagadatim meant it was midrashim, it was agadatas, it was things that were actually written down. Which you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to write down Torah Shabbat. This is before the Chassim said Gemara. You're not allowed to write down Torah Shabbat. So he asks the Gemara, how are you going to be Kosev? So you're not allowed to write it. So how are you allowed to use it? The Gemara says that whenever it comes, we're afraid people are going to forget Torah. They're not going to be able to observe the Torah properly. That the Torah Shabbat is supposed to be written and Torah Shabbat is supposed to remain by heart. But if it's impossible to do it, then you're allowed to violate that din. So too, when it comes to writing partial svarim, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to write an entire sefer of Tanakh. You're not supposed to write a half-baked Yeshayo and Shmuel and Yechezkel, etc. What are you going to do? No one's going to have haftaras otherwise. No one's going to be able to afford to write such svarim. So therefore, the halacha is that in order to enable us to remember the divrei Torah, otherwise we won't be able to read the haftaras properly. So if all else fails, you're allowed to, in a sense, violate this din. And write this quasi sefer haftarahs. So that was leads them in this man Chazal. So now we do that to a certain extent. Many people do it in printed svarim also. That they have a printed haftarah book, the haftarah. So there was some poskim used to be makbid that you should try to learn from an entire sefer, from an entire Tanakh, rather than from the haftarah books. There are different opinions and questions whether that's really significant as man as that. But there was some who had that practice. It's interesting, here the Gemara says that Rabbi Yechon Mishloch used to read the Shifrei Agadah on Shabbos. So Yechon Emden writes that the practice used to be He says the Sifrei Agadot weren't just stories. He claims the Sifrei Agadot were the Zohars, were the Kabbalah, were all the things that people didn't, regular people didn't learn all the time. So he has a fascinating insight. He says that during the week, so they didn't read those Svarim. During the week, they learned Gemara, they learned Mishnah, so the regular Nigla, he writes. On Shabbos, so the special Kedusha Shabbos, they had a special Siyata Shvaya to look at the delve of the things. They're a little bit more esoteric on Shabbos. So some people do that kind of a thing also. They read a little bit more Chassidish Svarim, other things, other deeper, mystical, more kinds of Svarim on Shabbos. So that's probably where that practice came from. That someone on Shabbos get a little bit of extra Siyata Shvaya. So Yaakov Ebdin claims that's Pshat Nisimar as well. Then at the end, he writes that you see from this that it was only on Shabbos. The rest of the week, they sat and learned Yom Balayla, regular Gemara, regular Mishnah, regular Halacha. So he goes on an attack and he says, that's what you should do. You should sit and learn regular Sugyas the whole week, and then you want to read after the meal a little bit of a lighter kind of, it's not lighter, a little bit different kind of things. So that's okay for Shabbos afternoon. But the rest of the week, you should be sitting and learning regular Torah. So let's take it and recommend it on this Gemara. Anyway, okay, we'll stop here.
Every practice that we use a haftarah book with all the entire knowledge.